to run a good business or a great service or an impactful charity, you have to listen to the market. That is why in 2020, we are intentionally making a pivot in how we podcast and what we podcast. We are going to be doing way more deep dive into what exactly Emerge Mothers Academy is offering to single moms and using interviews with our single moms so that in the course of hearing from them, we can explain what it is that we are doing that is so impactful at Emerge Mothers Academy and why we are doing that. What is it about social services and advocating for the lives of humans? What is it about coming alongside other mothers to make sure that they can stabilize and become independent? And where is that secret sauce laying that makes some moms so resilient, where they will not back down? And in the midst of circumstance, she will choose to rise up. She'll emerge. And in the To Emerge podcast for 2020, our intentional interview style will be interjected with service and programming information about Emerge Mothers Academy because we want you to truly understand what we do and why it is so effective. In 2019, we served 107 moms, which is the most we have ever served. And we are a small, but mighty charity. That means we impacted 247 of their children, which by November put us over 1,000 children served. Whoa, you guys. Emerge Mothers Academy is no small story. When you look at the measure and the value and the depth of a human life, even impacting one means all the world. But in this case, we keep on chugging to affect and change the trajectory of a single mom's life. We believe when you get her started, she will do the rest. Please enjoy the new To Emerge podcast. Emerge Mothers Academy is proud to present the To Emerge podcast, monthly interviews centered on empowering mothers. Our desire is to have you walk away believing that you can do this. You have the ability to rise up and the capacity to emerge. Today, we're going to hear from a lovely mom of ours, Cindy. Cindy believes so much in personal challenge, in advocacy, you know, as advocacy of self, advocating for your children. She also believes in the true importance of stabilizing and not just living a willy-nilly life. Having been raised by a single mom and becoming a single mom herself, she knows the importance of stabilizing and becoming independent. And that is so much about what we do when we come alongside single moms at Emerge Mothers Academy. We work to equip them so they become confident as a woman and caring as a mom. And what that means is that in the workplace, in public, and at home, she is stable and she is independent. It can make her confident as a woman while also balancing being a compassionate, caring, and resilient mom. We hold a tension between contributing to the workplace and being a woman who can carry her head, who can rise up and emerge, while also going home with a level of confidence, but a certain softness to who we are, that as our children watch us, they know mommy is so tough, but mommy is so safe. How do we do that? That is holding a tension. The beautiful thing about this interview is you're going to see people like Cindy who do it, and they do it well, because she believes in how she advocated for herself and her children to not lose herself in the midst of feelings or being hurt or being very confused or fighting for the safety of herself or her children. But you know what? There is a will that supersedes anything you feel. And Cindy shows us that because you are the adult, you must look yourself square in the eye in that mirror and tell yourself who you are. You have a will. You have agency over yourself to explain to yourself what is happening. It is not the circumstance that can tell you who you are. It is determined by you. You choose. So, moms, anyone, you will have feelings throughout this year, throughout your lifetime. You may be hurt. You will be confused. You will be searching for who it is you are supposed to be. But because you're the adult, you can tell yourself with resilience, I will get through this. With a square look at who I am, I can do this. And people like Cindy are a great example of at the sacrifice of self, at the sacrifice to anything, no matter what someone might think of me, no matter how I look, no matter what the circumstance could, no matter what people are going to say about this, I will protect my children. Cindy is one of these moms who at every cost puts her kids first, and even at the sacrifice of self, she will make sure that her kids grow up to contribute to society and not become trouble to society. Because if anything else, our goal as a parent is to be sure that our children are launched, that the next generation goes into our community well and doesn't go into the community as another bit of statistic or any type of trouble. This is why social service means serving the social value of each person. Emerge Mothers Academy tremendously values not just case management, but person-to-person connection, so that a woman truly feels we have come alongside her. A woman truly feels that as we advocate for her, she begins to advocate for herself, and that protects her children. It covers them like a blanket. That's what security, that's what stability, and that's what independence looks like. And sometimes all you need to know is that there is another person in your corner. And Emerge Mothers Academy is an organization, but far more than just being some kind of organization. We're just a person in the corner cheering you on. Emerge, you mothers. Emerge. Rise up, you mothers. Rise up. As you look at yourself each morning, you get to choose to tell yourself who you are. Rise up, mother. You can emerge. Hey, everybody. So glad you're with us for another week on the To Emerge podcast. Today, I have the most pizzazzy, fabulous woman ever who you will love. I need not even give her much of an intro because as soon as her mouth opens, you're going to love her. She is a single mom, Twin Cities, but has a long immigration story before coming to the Twin Cities even. So I would love for her to share her story. I'm not going to do any more. Take it away, my good friend, Cindy.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I love talking about these, like these conversations need to be had. And I'm so glad that I get to be a part of a bigger picture. So I was born in Colombia. I came to the U.S. when I was 13 years old, and I lived in Florida. And then from there, I finished high school there, and then I moved here to Minnesota, right, from Florida. Crazy. Had never seen snow. It was quite the thing. But I love change, and I adjust quickly to things, and I love a challenge. So I came here to a small Christian college in Bloomington. That is where I met my now ex-husband. And I just kind of went from there. I got married, was married for a few years, and I'm divorced now. And I have two beautiful kids. And yeah, they're the love of my life. They're the engine of my life. And yeah, here I am as a single mother. And honestly, I kind of love it. So...
But what parts of it do you love more than the heartache of it? Like, how does that outweigh it?
Gosh, there's so much good that has come from something so unbelievably hurtful and painful. There's freedom. And not just for my kids and I, but there's safety. There is... so much. And I think I can go more into the story to kind of tell you what I have gotten out of and what the beauty of my life is now compared to what I had before. But
ultimately, what it is these two boys that have to watch your lifestyle to develop a worldview for themselves. And so you get to be an agent over you, and then you get to be the one that instructs them in trying to figure out who they are.
Absolutely. And goodness gracious. And I mean, Becca, let's be real honest here. I wear my heart on my sleeve, get ready, because I'm going to get real honest. I grew up in Colombia, and my mom was a single mother. And I never had my dad in the picture, really, thankfully. just was, he was dealing with addiction. He was an alcoholic and such things. So my mom just kind of got me out of the situation. And every decision I made from a little girl till really I was married, I made sure I did everything with one goal in mind, and it was to avoid being a single mother. Because I knew how hard it was, because I knew the struggle that my mom and I went through, because I knew what hunger felt like, because I knew what scarcity was, because I knew what just the emotional trauma that it brings, because I knew what it's like to see a mother just break down at night and, you know, and be an emotional support for her, because that was just something I didn't want. I didn't want for my kids, obviously. So I really, really tried to avoid that. So when I got married, truly, I didn't know any better man. He was incredible, hardworking, just a kind, generous soul. And I truly, at the time when I married him, there were no signs of what was to come. There were no huge red flags. He really was, I wanted to grow old with this man. I loved him dearly. Everything I had, I gave to him. I made the best decision at that time with the information I had. Had I known anything that was going to happen, girl,
exactly.
I believe in China, and you know what I mean? Like, no, I would have never gotten into it, but,
Right. Of course, your head was straight on your shoulders and you used the information you had. You looked at this person who was absolutely wonderful to you and such a good hard worker, good person. Yeah. But see, here we get into like kind of a philosophy about human nature. Does that mean people can change, or does brain chemistry change, or do we just get duped? And really, that is who they are. They just knew how to pretend for a while.
Sure.
What is it?
I think it can be both. For me, goodness, he was such a catch. I felt so lucky. But for in my situation, he was predisposed in a way to mental illness. So there is history of mental illness in his family from his mother, his dad, his sister, brother. So, and in my eyes, he was great. He was such a sane person. But this specifically illness that he deals with is, it doesn't show up in men until late 20s. And we married early 20s. And I had no idea I would be dealing with something like that. And so I think, you know, it was something that creeped up on us. And that also brought addiction, which we were in treatment for this addiction for 3.5 years. I mean, we went to the couples counseling, the group counseling, the one-on-one counseling. I mean, we went to one of the best counseling places for this one particular addiction in the world for quite a few years when we were married. So,
So did you stay in for 3.5 years of therapy because you felt like, well, I'm his hope, I'm his reason, I'm responsible for him, or you truly believed he'd be able to change, break some of the addictions, get his life back in order? Like 3.5 years is a long time to like hang through someone's therapy.
Right. Yeah. I was hopeful. I think just who I am as a person, I always think there's hope. I always think there's something better, that if I work hard enough, that if I, you know, I put enough effort, that something good will come out, that there will be a result, that we'll get through this, that there will be freedom, that there will be sobriety. And there were times of that. There were times of breakthrough. There were times of sobriety, but there was always that relapse.
Yeah.
And every time that relapse, it was like a bigger and bigger bomb and a bigger and bigger bomb. And I was starting to suffer. I stayed in it, one, because I didn't love myself. And I wasn't as confident as I am now, one. Two, yeah, I just didn't have boundaries. So, I mean, he could come and do and go as, you know, as it, he dictated the temperature of the relationship. You know, he, all the attention was on this one thing and him and his ups and downs and his emotional instability. And, yeah, it was, it was just, yeah, I was devoted to him. I loved him. Girl, I prayed over that man hundreds of times. Like, there truly was so much that was done, and in the hopes that this would change. That was always my hope. But there was another layer to this too, is that we were part of a community who is very conservative, who is very traditional, who has this narrative that they kind of use in all the marriages, to be honest. It's like, okay, you, this is your suffering. Like, this is your thing that you have to carry. Like, you are Paul, and this is your thorn on your side, and you have to stick through with this man through anything, which I think there's wisdom in that. But and there's always the, you could never under any circumstance divorce.
So then how do you get to a place where you're like, I watched my mom be a single mom. I am so in love with him and so committed to him. There's all these factors saying, I don't want to ever get divorced. But then at some point, there must have been something that broke it. That was like, absolutely, I will not live the rest of my 80 years on earth like this.
Two things. One, my mental health.
Yeah, you were starting to feel like you were the crazy one.
Right. And because, again, going back to this, yeah, you can never divorce. I mean, unless you have a bruise on your face, Becca, it is not okay to separate or divorce from your husband under it. Like, there isn't. Like, you have to stick with him, even if there is emotional trauma, even if there is psychological trauma. Like, you've got to stick through it. And that's absolutely. And I started to doubt my own sanity and my own perspective of life, just making excuses and this pressure that you cannot divorce. I mean, we were leaders in the church, and we were mentoring young people, and we were part of this community that looked a certain way. And so, so much pressure that my mental illness, I was like, holy moly, this is, I'm suffering. And it seems like the only way out of this is death.
Oh,
and it
yeah.
seems like every force around me is telling me that my reality is not correct, that what I'm thinking is wrong, that what I'm feeling is wrong. I wasn't a present mother, because I was always just so sad, and I was like, the only is death. And so I was on antidepressants for a while, and I just needed, gosh, it was just so dark. I just remember my bed just crying and crying and just falling asleep crying. I'm like, God, just like, get me out of this. But I don't want to have to honestly kill myself or my children to get out of this. It was, you know, yeah, I think divorce set us free. But, and yeah, that was something that was not present. And then I started having panic attacks, right? Yeah, so then I had this happen twice towards the end of my marriage. And it is not like me to do this, to lose control over my body, to not be present, to just kind of check out of my mind and out of my body, and to not be able to move. And, you know, my jaw was clenched. I couldn't get out of this no matter. And this happened usually after really heavy arguments. And I was so drained after that. Like, after this attack, something I didn't know, it was so humbling to experience that, because I now have more compassion for those who go through that, because I'm like, oh, girl, just get out of it. Put some music on, like, let's go, let's go. But you truly can't. And is this trauma, is your body and literally every cell, your brain, your muscles, your nerves, just responding to this extreme stress? And it's awful. So that was new for me. So I had two of those. And I was like, this is not sustainable. I cannot keep going through this, because I'm not going to be a good daughter, a good mom, a good sister, a good friend. And then another thing that got me out of this was the boys.
Yeah.
I started noticing, because of the mental and emotional state that my ex-husband was in, and myself too, there was just, it was toxic. It wasn't safe. There was a lot of arguing. There was a lot of ups and downs emotionally, where there was no consistency. You know, the boys and I started walking on eggshells, and I'm like, I am not a good mother if I let my kids witness this. Right. And if I let them live through this, and if I say that it is okay to go through this. I will not be a good mother. You know, as long as I live, I will do anything to provide a safe environment for them. No matter what cost, even if it costed being misunderstood by the church, even if it costed having literally negative $30 in my account and not knowing where this month's rent was going to come from, even if it costed standing in line at the local food shelf for an hour to get canned corn, like, no matter, I would do anything for those boys. So yeah, it was those two things that were like, yeah, we got to get out of this. And I don't know where that strength came from, but I did it.
So did it feel like an instant light and lifting and ease as soon as like the divorce was final? Or did it just trudge on and get harder before it got better?
Oh, girl. And I think it's different for every divorce. But in my case, it took 2 years. For my divorce to be final.
Wow, and that's a long time.
Right? And then,
you guys couldn't agree on anything or what?
Yeah, absolutely not. And the people say that Minnesota is, it's a woman's state. In many ways it is, but certainly not when it comes to family law. There are a lot of slaps on the wrist, but there really takes a lot for a judge to create a judgment. And it was hard. Oh, Becca, it was excruciating. Whenever I had those meetings with our lawyers or when I was at the court in front of that judge, my body ached. Like, it was awful. So there was no lightness at all. Not when I got out of the divorce, not when I was going through it. Not at all. However, in that struggle, I was very intentional about keeping my own sanity and about investing in myself and in my kids. So that brought about some lightness and some hope and some rebuilding and self-confidence. And, it looked like, more of the practical stuff was like, okay, well, I'm going to go to bed early and I'm going to set myself up for success. And baby girl, you're going to be up at 5 a.m. and you're going to wash your face, take a cold shower, moisturize the skin, drink that water, drink that coffee, girl, and you're going to go get that money bag and provide for those boys. Because as long as in my life, they will never be hungry. And you just like get, you put on a bomb playlist. Woo. Girl, you put on a face of makeup, like you're feeling yourself like you can do anything, you will apply for that job. And so in my case, I went back to school for a bit and I took some credits and I was like, goodness gracious, what is the one thing I know how to do? I'm like, well, I'm bilingual. And then someone told me, they're like, oh, they can translate. And I became a professional translator that sustained the boys and I for a long time. But yeah, it was hard. And to this day, Becca, even interacting with my ex-husband brings that heaviness, but there is more lightness and happiness and joy to my life than there ever was. So yeah, it's hard and good. It's heavy and light. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. I mean, I feel like you build a sacred history with a person so they know all the things about you, right? So they kind of always have a little bit of a thumbprint on you, even though you're working towards, becoming free and separating yourself from their life. It causes some tearing. And so the tearing always leaves a little bit of threads that they know how to pull on. So I love that you were like, I got myself up. I put on a, full face of makeup because I had to find my identity or I had to figure out the ways that I was going to fight for my boys and fight for myself and go to sleep and at least act like you're not depressed, even though maybe your brain chemistry is. What are a couple other things where you were like, this day is one of those days where, we're going to court or I know I'm going to bump into him? Or how do you even prepare yourself for a day like that?
Very cold shower in the morning.
you and your cold shower.
Yeah, that's, girl, it gets you out of a mood. You know what I mean? With the music on loud. It might take some like rap music, to get you like... And you put on a bomb outfit, like something that makes you so confident. So whenever I prepare myself for these meetings, girl, I put on a suit. I was cute. I did my hair, did my makeup. I was confident. I had my suitcase, you know, I was ready. And then in the car, very loudly, this is by myself, obviously, not with the buzzer on, but I had "This Girl Is on Fire" by Alicia Keys. Just blasting on repeat, singing it and saying it to myself, like, girl, you're on fire. I am a survivor. And I'm going to work hard, and I am going to fight until the fifth heaven for these boys and for fairness and for everything that they need. And so that's how I prepared for the courts. And it was hard. For the day, sometimes, honestly, this is a picture. It feels just like this. Like you have a semi-truck, like the big semi-trucks on your shoulders. And you are carrying that every day. So you do all these things, yeah, to get ready for the day in the morning. You get those boys dressed. You pack their lunches. Get their uniforms ready. Go, go, in the car. You drop them off, blah, blah, blah. Get to work. And you work really hard the whole day. And then the nighttime comes. And then you're alone with yourself and your thoughts and your emotions and the heartbreak and the vulnerability of just being alone with your thoughts. And so something I recommend is you have to write through those emotions. You literally have to like Superman yourself. Like, you know how Superman like opens up his shirt and just like, whoa, exposes? Girl, you need to break yourself open at night. And you let all those emotions pour out. Is it anger? Girl, go punch a pillow. Be quiet because the boys are sleeping, you know? But punch that pillow. You need to clean. Go clean that entire house and sweat doing it. Create some physical energy to feel good. Put in the music and cry and cry and cry. And look at yourself in the mirror and be like, girl, you're a survivor. You're going to work hard. Are you going to give up? I'm not going to give up. Literally just talking to yourself in the mirror. Just write through those emotions, cry it out, and still get up at 5 a.m, girl. And still be present for those boys. And stuff everything down, and you talk to them, and you walk your heart things with them, and you be happy, and take them out on walks. And you, in a way, you have to pretend sometimes. Sometimes you just have to act it out for their own safety, for their own happiness, for their own joy. And the more you start acting that out, the more you become that thing. So the more, right? Like the more happy you are, the more confident you are, and the more you become it.
Right. So it's called the as if theory, right? If you act as if it's going to be okay, someday the actual feelings will follow what your will, what your mind was choosing. Right? Someday the feelings will follow along with the will.
Yeah. And you're right. The more you think this is going to be okay, it will be. And I'm here on the other side. It passed. It passed like a kidney stone, I will tell you, but it passed.
Right. It's awful. It's horrible. Can you give us just a short phrase or even one word that on your very like worst day, where you're like, I know I'm supposed to be up right now. It's 5:15. I am not up. I don't even know how to get out of this bed. But then you decided, nope, I'm getting up. For what reason? Like, what is it that got you to get through this?
The boys.
Yeah.
Sometimes you really don't want to get up. Sometimes you're tired. Sometimes you have the stomach flu. Sometimes all three of you have a stomach flu. Oh yeah. So I just focus on the next thing. Have you seen Frozen 2?
No, we haven't seen it yet.
Oh girl, no spoilers, but there is a song there with Anna. Don't want to say anything, but the song is, what's the next right thing?
Yeah.
So I'm like, the whole day seems so overwhelming to me. I have to work. I have to wake up. I have to clean. I have to do laundry. I have to keep it together. I have to go to court. I have to deal with paperwork. I have to deal with people coming at me with their opinions. I have to do all these things. This day seems so overwhelming. I don't want to do it. But you just say, you know what? What's the next thing? Okay, we need breakfast. Okay, let's get up. Let's get some breakfast. Okay. What's the next thing? Let's clean up. Clean up dishes. Okay, clean up dishes. So it really is that little, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? And then eventually you get through the day. And the day those boys go through hardship or struggle is the day I die. because if there's one thing I know how to do in life, is to be a really good mother. And under no circumstances will those boys go hungry, not have a roof over their head. That's not an option. I will do anything for those boys. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Like you said in the beginning, they're your engine.
Yeah. Truly, truly. Yeah.
Yeah. Cindy, thank you so much for just being so honest with us and also for giving us these like practical ideas. You and your cold showers, I tell you love your cold showers. But just even the image, I'm kind of left with an image of you standing in a long line waiting for just a can of corn even, because I know how dang committed you are to your sons. And I think it's the kind of women that have so much grit, who have so much resilience, because they choose an act of the will until one day the feelings match up. And you are the kind of woman who says, I will emerge and my children will watch me triumph because of it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Becca. And for anyone out there too, I mean, you don't go into single parenting with a lot of confidence already. I mean, you're like, oh, I failed in this relationship. My kids are going to grow up in a broken home. They're going to be whatever society says, oh, they're addicts, they have issues, blah, blah, blah. They're going to be lacking resources, whatever, whatever. I'm going to create my own reality. And you don't come into this with a lot of confidence. However, through this process, you gain confidence. And I'm over here on this side, not the same woman I was 2 years ago. I'm so much stronger because every time I got through a day, I was like, okay, I did yesterday, so I think I can do today. Oh, okay, so I got through that month. Oh, I think I can do another month and another year and more confidence and more because you just look back and you're like, yeah, I got through that. Yeah, I can do it today.
Right. The pages of your catalog start adding up until it becomes such a vast experience of who you are that you're like, now I know what I am and I'm good with it. Well, guys, like I said, Cindy's just one of those moms who at any cost will work to protect her children and be sure that they're secure. Isn't she great? Moms are so tough and resilient, and maybe that's just in our nature. We determine what safety, security, and stability looks like for our children. And when we become the most safe person for them to go to, they can let their guard down, and the trauma can start to melt. So as you work on yourself, and you make sure that you've advocated for who you are, you choose a will over a feeling, and you let the feelings follow. Eventually they will. But when you decide who you are, you can be as resilient or as weak as you let yourself. But as you rise up, you will see there's power in your choice. Thank you so much for listening to the To Emerge podcast. If you take a second to please subscribe and also leave us a review, more people will find us. A big thanks to Jessica Manning for our music and our producer, Laurel Goulson. And now, as you go about your day, remember, you have choice over who you are. You get to choose how and when you rise up. You will emerge.